I think when it comes to prospecting, many of us at one point or another have been guilty of simply doing what we've always done, right? It's become a habit. We've never really stepped back and dissected our prospecting efforts. But today, guess what? We're going to go there. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 25,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we begin today, I want to do a real quick shout out. Glenn Miller from Lismac was kind enough to write a review over on Apple Podcasts. And Glenn was nice enough to write, Lismac has brought Paul in twice to speak to our sales team. He has helped me refocus, sharpen my techniques, and to confirm that I'm on the right track. I listen to his podcast for continuous sales education as I'm always looking to exceed my sales goals. A big fan. So Glenn, thank you so much for doing this, first of all. And I want to ask you guys for a favor. Something like this means a lot to me, and it's not all little warm and fuzzies and oh, I feel so special when you guys write these things. I actually do feel pretty effing good when you write it, but there is a reason why I'd like for you to write a review. If you've been finding value, if you get some good actionable takeaways, which is really my objective in doing these podcasts, not to give you a bunch of philosophical stuff or fluff or cutesy shit. I want to give you things that can actually serve you and help you that you can immediately apply after listening to the podcast. If you agree with that, what I'd love for you to do is to go over to Apple Podcasts and write a review. Don't just give us the stars. But if you could write a review, here's why. It's not a popularity thing, by the way. It's a search engine over there, whether you realize it or not. And Apple Podcasts rewards those and ranks the ones higher who are getting positive feedback. And I think that's a great system. So again, if you've been finding value, what you would be doing, aside from making me feel great, is you're going to help other people find this podcast easier. So again, if you feel the need and you've been enjoying the podcast, could you please stop by Apple Podcasts? And again, thank you, Glenn Miller. Now, that is a long time. For me, 2 minutes just went by where I haven't taught you something. And if you've been listening to me for a while, you know I despise that when podcast hosts go on and on and on for 7, 8 freaking minutes and they really haven't taught you anything. So let's try to undo that right now. Today we're going to be talking about how you can dissect your prospecting cadence. There are 5 things that we're going to go over today that I'd like for you to look at. Now, why am I suggesting that you should dissect your prospecting cadence? Because like anything else in sales and in life, sometimes we're a tad guilty of doing things almost as if we've been hypnotized, right? And we're just not even giving any thought to it. It's a habit. It's almost a reflex. We give no thought to it. And that, to me, can be a dangerous mindset to have when we don't challenge what we're doing. Because you know what? At one point, it might have been just completely relevant to you. And it might have served you, whatever it is that you're doing or not doing. But things change. Business moves at the speed of light. So what I'm hoping for you to do by the end of this podcast is to look at these 5 areas that I'm going to suggest and just see if maybe there's some little 1% opportunities in there. We don't need to make a massive change, but just some little 1% adjustments that you could make to your prospecting cadence. So here they are in order. The very first thing, and I know you're going to say duh when I say this, but the very first thing is your message. Yes, duh, I'll say it with you. I'm not putting it in there for filler because I didn't have enough shit to talk about today. It's very important, your message, and I'm going to tell you why it's important. It's not what you're thinking. You can say, yes, it's important, because that's how you make an appointment. That's how you set a discovery call. But you see, I think that's your problem. And I think that's the biggest challenge a lot of us have, because we focus on a message that the recipient might not be in a place that they're ready for that message yet. And what happens is we annoy the shit out of them by talking about something they don't want to talk about. So many times our objective for the call is to, or just basically our flavor of the message is, I want to set an appointment. I want to set up a demo. I want to set up a discovery call. I want to set up a meeting. And it's not worded that way, but if you just peel it back, that's the gist of the damn message. And that just can bore the hell out of a lot of people. I also believe that when it's almost like having the same lousy date with somebody that you're courting and having the same lousy conversation. How could you possibly think that, unless you're incredibly good looking, by the way, then I would say maybe all bets are off. But for people like me that have a face for podcasting, right? It's just, how could you possibly think that this is going to go somewhere if you're talking about the same shit that people don't want to talk about and at that moment? So what I always recommend to my coaching clients is that they ask themselves a simple question. And the question is, what's my objective? So let's just say that you're trying to get, you're trying to ultimately sell the ABC company, but you haven't even had that first appointment with them. Now you might say, well, my objective is to sell them something. Okay. But that's your ultimate objective. Then you might say, well, then isn't it to get in front of them? Well, yeah, that's another objective. But how the hell are we going to get to that point? So your objective is not always going to be to sell them something. It's not always going to be to get in front of them. Let me give you some suggestions. Now, what's really cool about these suggestions, if I do say so myself, is that it will help you change the flavor of the message, and it can make this courtship a lot more interesting for you. Sometimes your objective is going to be to get a deeper understanding of this prospect, their challenges, their opportunities, their world, who they're using, what they like, what they dislike. Now you might say, well, I can do that in a discovery call. Well, not if you don't get in front of them. Right? So sometimes you need that information before anything else can happen, because then you could do other things and you could show them why it's valuable to them to take that meeting with you. And there's a lot of other things you can do with it too. But another objective might be demonstrating your expertise, demonstrating your company's capabilities, bringing value to the relationship. Now this one, I'm going to give you a real quick gloss over on this. Again, if you've been listening to me for a while, you know this whole provide value shit, it just really gets under my skin. Not the act of, well, you have to provide value. It's just the fact that people say it all the time. All the time over on LinkedIn, any discussion, we have to provide value, but nobody ever says, here's how you provide value. We actually did, and I say we, as if I'm this massive organization. It's just me. So when I say we, it's me and all my crazy personalities. I did a podcast, I'm guessing about 6 months ago, on how to provide value. But I'm going to give you three right off the bat so that I'm not one of those guys that's saying, just provide value. Okay, thank you. Thank you for being generic today. Well, one of the things you could do is, if I want to provide value or you want to provide value, how about offering them a resource, an idea? How about playing matchmaker and introducing this potential client to someone who could help them or buy from them or both, right? How cool would that be? So that's what I mean when I talk about providing value. Also, an objective could be building trust by offering evidence. There are all types of evidence, and when I teach it, I teach, I guess, a good 11 or 12 different types of evidence. But just to get you thinking for now, when I talk about evidence, I'm talking about things that you provide to, yes, build trust, but to reduce and or eliminate doubt, skepticism, objections. So those are important things. So we're talking about things like facts, samples, statistics, before and after picture, a case study, testimonials, things like that. Again, there's more to it, but an objective could be to simply build that trust. And it really should be one of your objectives in there, because I always talk about this study that HubSpot did, and it was ridiculous what they found. They were basically gauging how the world regarded salespeople in terms of trust. And what they found was that, I think it was something like 97 or 98% of the people responded said, I don't trust salespeople. And that shouldn't be a shock to you. Again, I'm not here to beat on the sales profession. I mean, I've been a salesperson pretty much my whole life. My dad was a salesperson. And by the way, my grandfather was a salesperson. So it's kind of been in the Castanian blood for a while. I'm not looking to crap on the sales profession. But sometimes we sweep this stuff under the carpet. We don't want to talk about it, but we know it exists. But what are we going to do about it? It's actually a healthy conversation for some of you guys to be having on your sales teams. In that sales meeting, instead of talking about numbers and TPS reports and all that kind of nonsense, talk about, hey, how can we proactively provide evidence to reduce, eliminate doubt and skepticism and objections? So that can be one of your objectives during the courtship and during, certainly, while you're trying to get in front of them. But the other thing too that you can have as an objective is, you know, you could, I'm just trying to put this into words here, you know, When you're embracing your messaging, I think there's two extremes. That's kind of where I wanted to go. There are two extremes. And the first one that I provided to you was this extreme of always trying to set an appointment, a demo, a face-to-face meeting, whatever the heck it is, right? Zoom meeting, whatever it is. But, and I gave you a bunch of things that you could have to change up the flavor and keep it interesting. But I believe the opposite exists too. One where we're giving. The problem with that, when you're giving, well, actually the problem with both extremes is that you're conditioning the recipient to do shit that you really don't want them to do at the end of the day. So the first thing, if I'm always trying to sell you, always trying to set up a meeting and a demo and a discovery call, I believe that the dynamic of our quote-unquote relationship, because it's probably not a relationship at that point, but the overall dynamic of our communication, I think is going to be one of evasion, where you're trying to evade me. You're trying to escape because I'm being what experts refer to as a pain in your ass. And think about that. Think about being a pain in your ass. No, think about times in your life where you might have done something, but just somebody irritated you to the point. It almost reminds me of when you were growing up and your parents, if you had my parents when you were little, if you'd ask them, hey, can I sleep over so-and-so's house, or can I go to that concert, or hey, can I have $50 for this or whatever, and they were in the process of thinking about it, if you broke their balls and you were constantly harassing them and it was the same message, hey, did you decide, that was a good way to either get a prompt no or to become one with dad's backhand. Seriously, that's no different here with prospecting. But the other side of it, like I said, where you're giving, it's, I believe, you're conditioning a bunch of takers, a bunch of people who only see you as that cool guy that shows up and sends them a podcast episode or sends them a resource or sends them a referral or that kind of thing. And you get friend zoned by these people that you're trying to court. So my suggestion is kind of a middle of the road approach where you're offering value, where sometimes you're calling up or you're reaching out to them with a question. And questions can be very important in any relationship, because questions, especially good ones, first of all, they gently guide the person towards something instead of you pitching them and talking at them. It could force them to reflect and kind of look inward and challenge them. But the other thing that a good question can do is that it can really build your rapport and credibility, either having the balls to ask them a question that other people are not asking, or just the overall quality of your questions. And seriously, questions lead, especially great questions, lead to a higher caliber, higher quality communication. And that's what we want, right? We're not looking just, I want to sell you. I want to pitch you. No, that's not really what we're trying to do. We want, at this point of the game, we simply want to be able to have a good, healthy dialogue. And one of the ways to do it is through questions. But again, there's a lot of ideas that we should be thinking about to change up the flavor of that communication. Next, we said the first one is message. The second one is the vehicle. The vehicle is how you're going to get that message to people. And for the most part, most people listening to this, I would venture to say, it's phone and email for you. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think you're limiting yourself. And here's what I hear a lot of the time. When I ask people, hey, if you don't mind me asking, you know, what, or actually, I'll ask a different question. I'll say, what do you prefer when it comes to prospecting? And I will admit, I'm kind of baiting people when I say this. It's kind of a loaded question. And when I say, what do you prefer? Usually people will say, well, I prefer the phone. I prefer LinkedIn. I prefer networking. I prefer doing these creative things, whatever it is. I hear all different things, by the way. It's not just the phone and email, but the majority is phone and email. But I love it how people will embrace the thing that they prefer. But the problem is your potential client really doesn't care about what you prefer. They're not sitting around, and let's use Glenn Miller, who was nice enough to write up a nice review on Apple Podcasts. And now I'm going to use him as an example. I doubt very seriously that Glenn Miller's prospects are sitting there and saying, you know what? I wonder what Glenn prefers. I wonder if Glenn would prefer to contact us through LinkedIn. I wonder if Glenn Miller would prefer a text message. They don't give a shit about Glenn Miller. They don't give a shit about you. And they certainly don't give a shit about me. I mean, seriously, somebody had to tell you guys this. So you got to stop with this nonsense of what you prefer. It was never about you. So what you need to do is you need to show up where they prefer for you to show up. But we don't know that until we experiment a little. So, and my point also is, by the way, if, let's just say somebody prefers LinkedIn, but you don't prefer it, and you're calling them and they hate the effing phone, I don't think that's going to go too far, folks. It's almost like getting back to the old dating thing. You want to go to a steakhouse, and you're courting a vegetarian. It just, it is a good, but you know, I prefer a good cut of meat. I don't. I prefer a nice salad. So I want you to, and by the way, when I said I prefer a nice salad, I was talking about vegetarians. I actually would prefer the steak. I just want to put that out there. Now, I know that my vegan daughter, if she were in sales listening to this, she would probably tear her sleeve and write me off for saying that, because I do cook vegan meals for her. She's an incredible cook, but every once in a while, I will be a good dad, and I will cook something for her. So having said that, which I think is an important takeaway for you. So the next thing that we said was obviously the vehicle. So I want to throw some things at you in terms of why you might want to change up the vehicle. Just keep in mind that it's not only a matter of preference here, that each vehicle gives you opportunities in that communication form, right? So in other words, the phone, there are a lot of different things that it gives you, but people can hear your voice. They can pick up inflection and emphasis, and especially if you have something that you have to communicate. How many times have we sent an email and afterwards like, that really should have been either a face-to-face meeting, which would have been ideal, or at the very least should have been a phone call, because people just completely miss it sometimes in written form. But the other thing too with snail mail, well, what's cool about that as a vehicle is that we can send samples. We could send something fun and creative with email. Well, I could attach something. LinkedIn, guess what? There are no gatekeepers over on LinkedIn. But also, they have some really cool stuff in their messaging that you might not be aware of, where you can, right there on LinkedIn, you can embed a video in your messaging. You could send someone a voice message up to 1 minute over there. Now you might be thinking, but yeah, but Paul, that's the phone. Well, if they're not picking up the damn phone, or a gatekeeper is stopping you, and you're not even getting a chance to leave a voice message, guess what? LinkedIn might be it for you. But text messages, right? Now, I'm not a fan of text messaging, and if you're one of my clients, you know that I just really don't like it. But again, that's that preference thing. Here's the thing about text messages. There is a 100% open rate for them. So my point is that changing it up can increase the probability of hitting the home run on what they want to communicate on, but it also allows you different capabilities, but also it changes things up and it keeps it interesting instead of going to the same shitty place for your date while you're courting these people. And you know what, too? I always talk about this, and you know it wouldn't be a podcast if I didn't drop the P word. The P word. I'm going to drop the P word. The P word is propinquity. I love that freaking word. I love it. Propinquity means nearness and closeness and kinship. And my spin on it, it's what we create when we bump into people in various places. And I want you to think about a scenario. I always like to talk about that neighbor at the fence. And it's one of those neighbors you don't know too well. Maybe it's a new neighbor, or heck, we've all had that neighbor that for years we've lived right by them, but we really don't know each other. It's kind of one of those, I call it a wave at the fence neighbor, and that's about it. But what happens is, you're out walking the dog, and your neighbor's out walking the dog, and the dogs get along. They're not ripping the shit out of each other, and you're there tugging on the damn leash, mauling each other out there in the road, like my dog would do, by the way. Nasty little bitch she is, but anyway. And you do what Larry David refers to as a stop and chat. You stop and you chat, and it's innocent, it's pleasant, and you're on your way. But then, I don't know, maybe it's a week later, 2 weeks later, you bump into your neighbor and their significant other online at the movies. And you do a very quick stop and chat. And it's pleasant and you're on your way. Notice, it's pleasant and it's quick. None of this 3 hour stop and chat shit. Just saying here. But maybe another time you bump into them at the movies. And I'm not talking about every other minute, because now they're probably stalking your ass. That's a whole different thing. But what happens is, when we bump into people in different places, and it's a pleasant exchange, we start to build that familiarity where they know you. They know you a little bit better. And you start to, over time, build that kinship and the trust and everything else. And I just think it's a real important part of the courtship. So something to think about there. Number three, the first, by the way, very quick review. Number one, we said, was to look at your message. That was the first component. The second one, the vehicle. How are we going to get this message to people? Are we going to just stick with the phone and email? No, hell no. We need to add some more stuff in there. By the way, just a quick news flash for those of you who have been living on an island or some shit and you've just completely lost track of the time. It is 2020. So for you not to be using the full array of shit that is available to you, it's just unacceptable. So you really have to start embracing some of those other things as well. And I want to point out, because no matter what, This always happens when I'm in front of people or I'm on LinkedIn. Where somebody wants to turn this into, Castaing just said the cold call is dead. Or Castaing just said, you know, emails. No, I'm not. I'm saying they're lonely. They need some companionship. And you are completely allowed to embrace additional forms of outreach. Okay? So next, component number three is how much space are you going to put between each attempt to get a hold of this person, each attempt to communicate with them. Now, the problem is that I believe that many sales reps, a very high percentage of them, are smothering their prospect with communication. And that's unfortunate because the people you're trying to get a hold of, decision makers, are, in addition to you smothering them with communication, they're being smothered by other salespeople, and they're being smothered by messaging in general. There's a lot of things that are coming at them to distract them and to take them away from you. So let me give you an example of something that I think is completely unacceptable. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not knocking the people who are offering this advice. I just disagree with the approach. One of them is a well-respected sales author. The guy is a rock star over on LinkedIn. I admire the shit out of him. I just disagree with what he's saying. What he is doing and what some other people are talking about is this idea of leaving a voicemail and then immediately emailing them, referencing the voicemail, and then embracing some kind of messaging over on LinkedIn. Now, I want to point out the obvious to you, so I'm going to put on my Captain Obvious cape to do this. I will step up on my soapbox here, proud as hell. The all-knowing Uncle Paul will now speak in his most pompous, arrogant effing voice. The problem with leaving a voicemail and then immediately sending an email referencing the voicemail, and then embracing messaging on LinkedIn. I am no math genius, but I believe you just interrupted and annoyed the shit out of somebody three times within probably a 5-minute span. Aside from being irritating, I want to let you know that it is incredibly needy. It is incredibly needy. Many times, when we go later, like further down the line in the whole sales cycle, you've been in front of them, you've had a meeting, you've done your needs analysis, you've presented solutions, and all of a sudden when you're going for the close, they're beating you up on price. Many times, I'm not saying every time, I don't know your individual circumstances, what you did and what you didn't do, but a lot of the time we can trace this back to the overall perception that this prospect had of you. And it can be traced back to all this needy shit where you're sending them a message, then you're sending them another message, then you're doing another one. Did you get the message? I'm forwarding the message. It makes you look desperate, like it's 3 a.m. in the bar and you're looking to hook up with anyone with the pulse at that point. That's really how it looks, just so you know. And I get it, why people are doing this, and in your defense, if you're doing it. And I was being a complete dick there. I realize that, folks. But I understand the reason why people are doing this. They feel, well, they have short attention spans, and, you know, a lot of people don't listen to their voicemail messages. But my argument is this. There is nothing wrong with a voicemail and an email referencing the voicemail and LinkedIn messaging. I'm just proposing you put a little room in there for that to breathe. So I think that's important. And it really goes back to what I was saying before. What happens is you are creating, you are conditioning people to disregard you. You are creating a dynamic, a communication dynamic of evasion instead of embracing the communication. And instead of encouraging dialogue, people are avoiding you. The next thing. This is going to be number four, is the overall attempts, the amount of attempts that you're going to be making. And in many ways, the overall attempts, how many that you're doing, you know, in some ways, what I'm going to say is also related to, you know, how often you're doing this and the amount of space and everything else. But the amount of time, I want to give you an example of something. And I usually don't drop names on the podcast, but I'm going to in this guy. I would never, by the way, bash an individual or whatever. But there's a company you might have heard of, and by the name of PayPal. And I do a tremendous amount of business with PayPal. All these online things that I'm always talking about, this webinar, and even my coaching clients, they pay me through PayPal. And so I do a lot with them. And several years ago, I'm guessing it was at least 6 years ago, they came out with a product. And the minute I heard about it, I was an instant, this is awesome, I want to do this. And I immediately saw the value in it. And they launched this product called PayPal Working Capital. And what you can do is you can basically get a loan from PayPal. And what's cool about it is you can pay it back sort of on your terms. And what I mean by that is with the traditional loan, you have payments that are due every month, almost like a mortgage or whatever. And if you're like me, you have seasons in your business. I have times of the year where things are a little bit slower. And that's the time usually when you really appreciate having a little working capital. But the problem is paying it back and making the loan payment and everything else for a lot of people can be a challenge. So what's really cool about PayPal Working Capital is that they make you an offer when you apply. And, you know, they tell you how much you're approved for, and then they offer a few different options for you. And basically what they do is that since they receive your money before you get it, right off the top, they'll take a predetermined percentage to go back towards your loan. So what's really cool about it, those times when no money's coming in, you're not paying anything out. When times are busier, guess what? You're chipping down that loan. So I love the concept of it. And they're not really charging you an arm and a leg to do it. I love it. And I was thinking, oh, wow, I really want to do this. And as if they had, which they didn't, obviously, they had the world headquarters of Castain Training Systems bugged, I get a call. And I didn't take the call because the damn caller ID said Ireland or some shit. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know, man. I'm doing some other shit. I don't know who the hell's calling me from Ireland. No disrespect to Ireland, but you know, I was doing some other shit. And I'm thinking it's a sales call, which it was. And it was somebody pitching PayPal Working Capital. Now, I was busy, and I was doing some other stuff now. All of a sudden, the next day, I get hit again. PayPal Working Capital. And they don't leave a message. It's the same Ireland phone number, and I'm getting hit with this a few times a day, leaving a message or whatever. And the overall amount of attempts, I'm going to say, was probably 5. No. It was actually a lot more than that. I'm sorry. That was probably how many messages they left for me over the course of a week. The overall attempts was nutty. It was probably 25 or some shit over the course of a week, to the point that I was incredibly interested. I told you this. I mean, I back there, didn't I sound like the spokesperson for freaking PayPal? You're probably thinking, is Castain getting a cut here and he's launching into a commercial and dicking us around and not telling us that he's getting paid to send business there? I wish I was. I mean, I was just so on board with this. And then because they were paying the ass, guess what? I wanted nothing to do with them. But actually, I did. And I'll talk about that in a minute. So what happened was then, and this brings us to the next thing in here that you have to look at, the overall duration of your prospecting cadence. That's number 5. Overall duration. At the end of a week, I got a breakup email or some shit, or a breakup voicemail. I don't remember. It was 6-7 years ago. So here's how this thing played out, just so you know. The person annoyed me to no end. I just didn't like it. I thought they were pushy. And I said, I'm going to buy from them, but I am not doing it through this rep. I'm just going to go on the website and buy the damn thing. Screw her. And that's how I ended up by doing it. But I say that to you, not because I want to bash PayPal. I love them. And by the way, I've taken a few working capital loans with them. And they are amazing. If you haven't considered them yet, you should. But this, how could you give up inside of a week. Maybe that was a PayPal thing. They said, you've got 1 week to convert this guy here. We think he would be prime for a credit line. You know, we've reviewed the, you know, how his business is very seasonal and stuff. We're coming up on that time of year. But if you can close him within a week, we'll give you X percent. Otherwise, you got to move on. How could you possibly think that you're going to build a relationship with someone within a week? And it just doesn't work. It just really doesn't. And this, by the way, mini rant, is why I'm just so against these breakup types of emails and breakup types of voicemails. So here's what I want to propose to you in terms of an alternative, because there are extremes. There are the extremes where we're chasing somebody forever and we're utilizing resources and time and energy. And if I could be a little warm and fuzzy, a little bit of hope, where there is no hope. So I get that, pursuing somebody way too long. But then we have this example, like I gave with the PayPal working capital, where 1 week they're tapping out, and the amount of messaging that they hit me with inside of that week has been, it was insane. It was ridiculous. But what I would propose is this. Instead of annoying the hell out of somebody, instead of giving up, why don't you consider cooling it down and then heating it up later? So what you could do, and please don't do it after only a week, unless you have something going down in a week and you just legitimately have a week to get them there, an event or whatever, a special, it's over at the end of the, okay, I get it. Those are some great exceptions. But for the other, what, 99% of the time, what I would recommend that you do after you've done an honest effort, not after a week, at that point, don't do a breakup email. What you could do then at that point is let this cool off. Put them more on a drip campaign. Maybe it's once a month or whatever at that point. And then what you can do after maybe 6 months off, 4 months off, a year off, whatever the magic number is for you, I don't know what it is for you. At that point then, why don't you go back and then heat it up again? But again, when you heat it up again, there is no need to smother them with messaging. And that's it, folks. There you have it. The five areas that we talked about are, or the five components that you should dissect after this podcast. Your action item for this week would be to look at your messaging. Look at the vehicle. The vehicle is how you get the message to them. Stop saying things like, I prefer to call. I prefer to use LinkedIn. Remember, nobody cares about that. You really need to mix it up. So think about different forms of outreach that you could be using, not as a replacement to the phone or email, but to complement them. The other thing that I want you to look at, how much space you're putting between these attempts. Stop smothering people with messaging. Remember, what we're doing there is we're conditioning people to disregard us, to run away from us and evade us instead of embracing us in dialogue. The other thing too that I want you to think about is your overall attempts. How many overall attempts are you going to make? And then last but not least, over what length of time? What's going to be the duration here that we're going to do this? And please, none of this 1 or 2 week shit. And don't ever limit your options by basically telling somebody, and you're not saying it like this, but the breakup type of view. That does not serve you. Always leave the door open because you don't know where things can go. And that's what I have for you this week very quickly. This week on the 13th, day before Valentine's here in the US, we're going to be doing a webinar. And I have never done this webinar before. A lot of the webinars that I've done, like my email one, I've done probably 6 or 7 times. A lot of the prospecting ones, I've done several times. Closing ones, you guys get the deal. I have never done this one before. This is a brand spanking new webinar. And I will tell you about 95 to 98% of the content in here I've never shared before. And so it is really brand new content. And it's called How to Create a Kick-Ass Prospecting Cadence. It takes place this Thursday from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening to this right now and you say, oh man, I got a thing, I'm going to be away, you're getting your back waxed that day, I don't know. I mean, it could be. No problem. Sign up anyway, because if you do, I'll send you the webinar replay and a lot of really cool goodies, because what I'm going to be doing here is I'm going to be sharing a deeper dive into those five areas that I just gave you. But more specifically, I have three different cadences that I've created from start to finish. And when I say from start to finish, I talk about the scripts, I talk about the tactics, and I share the templates with you. So it's ready made for you. And all you have to do is just modify it for your use, right? And put it in the order that you want. I even talk about things, okay, when you do this type of outreach, wait 48 hours, then do this one. Here's the script for you. So I have it all prepared for you. If you'd like to learn more, please visit yoursalesplaybook.com/cadence, C-A-D-E-N-C-E. yoursalesplaybook.com/cadence. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Come visit our blog at yoursalesplaybook.com/blog.